Thank you for tuning into a podcast in our series, Real Life. Stay tuned for an inspirational exploration of dynamic experiences and insightful reflections on the highs, the lows life presents. TBS Now Radio brings you engaging content no matter where you are listening to this stream. Don't touch that dial as you journey with our presenter and guest today. Remember, this is a real-life podcast stream coming to you from TBS Now Radio. Stay with us as we uncover faith-based principles and practical ways to make a success of life.
Welcome to Real Life with Femi Bioy. My guest today is Mrs. Omotara Talabi. Tara, as we call her for short, is an administrator, an author, charity trustee, and she has created an organization called The Widow's Walk, or TWW for short. So when you hear me say TWW, we mean The Widow's Walk. She was married at 27 and widowed at 33. She has single-handedly raised two young adults, one of which was still in the womb when her husband left without having time to have said goodbye. She has an inspirational story to share, one that shows the power of God's love, light, and hope on a road to recovery from a life-changing pall of darkness. She is passionate about kingdom work, and this will become evident as she tells her story. In her personal reflections, she has created a volume chronicling her experiences. Tara has a lovely smile, a sweet nature, and as a single parent has created a wholesome, nurturing environment to help her son and daughter develop into exceptionally rounded individuals. TWW will exist to support widows through a most devastating period in their lives, to remind them that God cares and that they have not been forgotten or forsaken, that God will raise up helpers to support them through their new journey, to give proper recognition to widows and not sweep them under the carpet and pretend they do not exist. And finally, to care for them as the Bible says they should be cared for, either by their families or by the church. So, Tara has a diverse range of interest, ranging from TWW, which we've just spoken about, to reading, writing, cooking exotic dishes in an informal setting with her community. She's into pure drama, mysteries, and biographical accounts of interesting people. For the past 20 years, she's worked in England in primary education as an administrator. At her golden milestone of 50, she set out to respond to more challenges to help others. This has been rewarding as she's been appointed a trustee in the board of a local church charity. Coming back to TWW, this is another initiative ready to come out of incubation to catch widows and single mothers struggling with the pressures of walking alone, trying to juggle some really big balls. Tara will take us on a whistle stop from her beginnings, early life choices, life events, responding to challenges, single parenting, dealing with loss, rebranding herself, and foraying into authoring. This promises to be a roller coaster of joy. A few tears as we listen to her story. It is my pleasure to introduce Mrs. Omotara Talabi to my audience, and to welcome her to Real Life with Femi Ibiwoye.
Thank you very much. That's beautiful. Thank you for having me.
It is our privilege to have you. So let's get straight into it. Please share with my audience where you were born and what your early life was like growing up in your family.
Okay, so I was born here in the UK, South London to be precise. I was born in Queen Mary's Hospital. I'm one of four children. I'm the first. I lived with mummy and daddy up until I was 24. You know, so I left home when I was 24, basically. I lived in a nuclear family with just mummy, daddy, and we four children. And it was brilliant for most of it. I grew up in, I went to Nigeria when I was 8. Oh, Nigeria was very different from London. Very different. And I don't think I actually settled in Nigeria. You know, my heart was always here. So when I was coming back at 20, I was about 24. Yeah, 24 when I left Nigeria and came back to London. And I felt like I was going home, not leaving home.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So, what was the main difference between the culture in Nigeria? Was it the culture that you found to be not as attractive? Or was it just the general vibe, the people, the way things were done, the order, maybe the chaos, and so on?
I think it was probably the culture. Things didn't work the same way in Nigeria, the way they worked here. When I got to Nigeria at the end of the boom, the oil boom.
Okay.
So financially, things were not as good as they had been. Yes, I got to Nigeria in 1978.
78.
Yeah, okay. So just at the end of the whole boom thing, you know. So the idea was when I was going to Nigeria, was I thought you would go to Nigeria and next summer you would come for a holiday. Yes. But that didn't happen because it just wasn't feasible at the time. You know, both my parents had good jobs. We were not poor by any means. But it wasn't easy to just jump on a plane and come back to London for a holiday.
What did dad do? What did mom do?
My mother was a medical lab technician. So she worked in a medical lab. And my dad worked for NNPC, an oil company. So we were quite comfortable, you know. But then, where we lived in Lagos as well, the roads were not like the roads I was used to. There were power cuts, which was a whole new ball game. There wasn't always running water in the taps. All these little things make me feel like...
So it was a bit of a culture shock.
Yes, okay, it was. Okay. I didn't...
All right, so let's move on. Let's move on. You met your husband in university.
I did.
Tell us a bit about Temitope Abraham Aina Talapi.
Yes.
What was the attraction?
Temitope was the love of my life.
Was it love at first sight or was it a hot, passionate pursuit?
It wasn't exactly love at first sight. I knew him. We attended the same fellowship. So we both went to Obafemi Awolowo University. He was in, I think he was reading estate management. I was reading accounting. So our paths never crossed academically. But our paths crossed in the fellowship, the Christian fellowship where we both attended.
What fellowship was that?
It was called Christ Love Fellowship.
Okay.
And we used to sit near each other. So we weren't even exactly friends. But you know how you go somewhere? I always have a seat where I sit, even in my church today. Everybody knows that's Tara's seat, you know? And when I was in uni, on campus as well, in the fellowship where I went to, I had a seat where I used to sit. Tope used to sit very close to me. So if I didn't see him, I'll wonder where he is. If he didn't see me, he'll wonder where I was. So that's how we started. Not exactly friends, like I said. And then one year I came for a friend's convocation during the holiday, and then I met him, and then we got talking, you know.
In this country? Or...
No, back in Nigeria.
Oh, back in Nigeria,
yeah.
Okay.
Back in Nigeria, and then we got talking, and we exchanged addresses, and one day he just popped up in my house, and that
as
was how,
do?
Yes, as one does, and that was how we became friends. So we were very, very, very good friends before we got romantically involved.
What was loving and living with him like?
Tope was a gentle soul. He was a gentle soul. He was he was very accommodating and he had a very nurturing spirit, you know. So I loved being tutored under him, kind of, you know. He brought the best out of me. You know, he encouraged me to be more. And he believed in me, more than I believed in myself even. You know, he encouraged me to spread my wings. He'll say, no, you can do it. If I say, no, I can't do that. He will say, no, you can. You can. You actually can, you know. And he will encourage me to get to where I needed to go, you know. So, yeah, it was wonderful loving him and living with him.
A lot of your work experience has been spent in primary education.
That's right.
How did you settle for this career option from accounting?
Yes, indeed. So I came to England with a degree in accounting. I had never worked a day in my life. So when I got here, everybody wanted 2 years work experience, which I didn't have.
And you are not prepared to make it up.
I think this is exactly it. So that option was available, but I just couldn't do that, you know? I couldn't fake it.
Fake it until you make it.
I couldn't fake it. So what I did was there was somewhere in, I think, my local library, they advertised some job, some courses. And I took one of the courses. It was a very simple course. But the idea was that at the end of the course, you'll get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a word processing course, something as simple as that. So I did that. And then I got my first job working in a post office, on the post office counter.
Okay.
Now, I found out while I was working that any job that entailed numbers and money, I was comfortable with.
Hmm.
You know.
Accountancy. The accountancy.
Yeah. So any job I did had to entail some detail of calculating, you know. Not calculus, but arithmetic. A lot of money numbers. Yeah, I was comfortable with. Yes. So I did that job for a couple of years before I moved on to actually working in an accounts office. Now, I did that in two jobs and I found the pressure was just not for me. There were places where they were both private sector and my bosses were coming and say, "Are you coming in on Saturday?" And I had no intention of working on a weekend. It was very highly pressured. And at the time, Topper was doing highly pressured work as well. He was doing computing contracts. He was leaving home. You know, I thought both of us can't be working on this kind of level. Anyway, I eventually found a job in the council with the education finance.
Mm.
I loved it. I was temping. And when this job came around to work in a school, my colleague said to me, "This job will be good for you. Go for it." And they really encouraged me to go for it. You know, they were even prepping me for the interview and everything. And I went for the interview and I got the job. And the rest is history.
It's been a perfect fit. What are the qualities that make up the best administrators in primary schools? From your experience, because you're well experienced now.
Yes, very well experienced now. You've got to love the job, first of all. You've got to love working on your own, because a lot of it is you in the office and your books and your paperwork and everything, just you. I love that. You know, you do interviews and they say, I love working as part of a team and, you know, much as I do, I'd much rather work on my own. Because that way you can set your boundaries, do your thing the way you want it and not be reliant on somebody else to finish your task. Which is almost impossible, actually, to say you don't want to rely on somebody else. But if I could, I'd just do it myself. But of course, in a school office, I need somebody else's signature sometimes to finish off works and things like that.
So diplomacy, but, yeah, tact.
Is essential.
Yeah.
It's your essential.
Networking capability.
Yes. You've got to be able to smile. In the school office, yes. You come against all sorts of human beings. You know, all sorts of human beings. And you have to meet them where they are. I mean, for it to be harmonious, you've got to accept human beings the way they are. And with all their differences, with all their quirks. You know, so yeah, you've got to be able to be all things to all people.
Fantastic. So you're a charity trustee. What are your typical duties? And another question I'd just like to ask. What would you regard as undesirable attributes for anyone aspiring to do that?
To do what?
To be a charity trustee or even a responsible school governor.
Yeah.
One of those responsible...
Yeah.
Undertakings.
Okay, so I'm a trustee of two charities now. And one, you've got to believe in the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can't do it if you're not totally sold into it. Because you're legally responsible for the administration of the assets of the company, of the charity. You know, be it financial, be it assets, physical assets, machinery, real estate. You are accountable. Charity Commission can give you a call and ask you about stuff about the charity. So you've got to be involved. You've got to be available. And integrity is key. For me, I always tell people, I say, I might not have lots of money. I might not have a great big mansion. But I have integrity. And I guard it diligently. I want, if you know me, to know that about me, you know? So I make sure that my yay is yay and my nay is nay. If I say I'm doing it, I'm doing it. If I say I'm not doing it, then I'm not doing it. I also don't like people being late to anything. I don't do late. You know, if you tell me 9 o'clock, I expect you to be there by 10 to 9. If you get there on the dot of time, you passed, Femi. You did very well.
Thank the Lord.
You did very well.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, so yeah, I think those are attributes. You need to be sold out to the course. You need to be ready to answer the call whenever you know, you need to be available. If you get a call in the middle of the night because something is going on, it's not the time to frown. You get up and, you know.
You're calm and organized.
I try to be.
What are the things people do around you that unsettles your calm?
Yeah, like being late unsettles my calm.
What else?
And, like I said, I like things to be specific. Mm-hmm. I like people, I like for you to say that this is what I'm going to do and then you do it. You know, I've dealt with so many people that just can't do that. That will promise you heaven and earth, and then when the time comes, they let you down. Wow. I don't like that. I like your word.
How much slack do you give people before you
laugh? Well, now that I'm older, I've learned to give people slack. And I've learned to accept that everybody can't be like me. And we're all different. But I still wish that people take things more seriously.
Okay. So let's talk about your young adults. You've got a couple of young adults.
I do, yes.
Which of them has kept you up, praying more often in the night in the last 2 decades?
All right, I'll tell you about my...
What is the most effective way that you found to talk to him or her?
Yeah.
To talk them around to your plane of thinking?
Oh, goodness me. Honestly, I have 2 children, yes? And I have nicknamed them...
Do they like being called children now?
No. They're young okay. adults now. So right. I've got 2 young adults, let's Excellent. Say. And I've nicknamed them my chalk and cheese. And the reason why I've done that is because they are so different. They are 2 individuals that are as far as northeast from west. My son is very calm. He's my first. He's very calm. He's so laid back, he's almost horizontal. You know? If I had only him, I would feel parenting was easy. Yeah, 5 years after he was born, his sister came along just to show me that this parenting job is not a walk in the park. Yeah, so she's feisty, she's energetic, she's in your face, she always has something to say, you know, and she's not afraid to argue with you. Yeah, she's a lovely girl though, she really is. She's kept me on my toes. When my husband died and I just had Ayomide, if I only had Ayomide, I'll be a recluse. I'd hardly come out of my house. You know, there are lots of people that I won't speak to. I wouldn't have a course to speak to them. But with my daughter, it's like she's kept me alive, kept me awake. You know, she has friends from all strata of life. You know, that's my friend, he's from Egypt. And the other one is from Colombia, and one is from Ghana, and the other one is from Jamaica. She's all over the place, you know.
I can see the smile right in your face.
Of my baby girl.
Pride in your voice. Mm-hmm. And on that very happy note, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
You've been listening to Mrs. Omotara Talabi. Whatever you do, don't touch that dial. We'll be back with you on Real Life with Femi Ibiwoye on TBS Now Radio.
You unravel me with a melody. You surround me with a song of deliverance from my enemies till all. Child of God. I am a child of God. I'm no longer a slave to shame. I am a child of God.
You are tuned in to a radio stream from TBS Now with Femi Ibiwaya. Inspirational, engaging, uplifting radio. Don't touch that dial.
Welcome back to Real Life with Femi Ibiwaya on TBS Now Radio. My guest today is Mrs. Omotara Talabi, or Tara for short. In the first segment, we were speaking about her family, her husband, work-life balance with her functional other responsibilities. And now we're just going to be going back into the conversation. So welcome back, Tara.
Thank you.
Tara, before we left, we were talking about the young adults and their plane, how you got them around to their your plane of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you answered the questions indirectly. And so we know who your favorite is, so to speak. But if you haven't listened to the first segment, it'll be really good to go back to listen to that so that you can find out that secret. Mm-hmm. Okay, so early on the 2nd of September 2003, your husband was involved in a road traffic accident on his way back from work. What are your recollections of the days leading up to this event?
Did you
see it coming? Were there any signs?
In retrospect,
Because
one of the things at the time when it happened, I thought to myself, how could I have not seen it coming? God, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you warn me that something was happening? But when I look back, I do see the signs. I mean, the whole occasion I can remember like it was yesterday. You know, we're talking about 18, 19 years ago. But I remember it today like it was just yesterday. And a couple of nights before it happened, Topper told me some certain things that I didn't know of before. Told me of our financial issues. You know, he told me of where he pays our rent to, which I never knew anything about that. That was his domain. I didn't have to know it. He printed out for me his bank statement. He'd never done it before. He just said, I should see this, you know. He printed out his credit card statement, all that he did. And then the night before, two nights before he died, he was working overnight at work and I was at home. And we had telephone conversations. I used to call him before I went to bed and we'll just chat. And one of the nights I called him and we had a long chat. And he told me how happy he was to be my husband, you know, how proud he was of me. He told me how he told me about all the financial issues and I just took it in my stride. He said another woman would have screamed and hit the roof and he's so proud of me, so happy to be my husband. Everything. It was a lovely conversation and I went to bed. The next night when I gave him a call, he was very busy, so we couldn't talk. And then he said to me, I'll see you in the morning. And he never came. Morning never came. So that was the two or three days up to when it happened. And then, of course, when he didn't come home the next day, and I eventually got the call the evening of that day, after trying to call him all day, you know, I knew something was wrong because he always contacted me during the day.
Okay, so you were kind of isolated because the accident happened early doors.
Yes.
On the morning, was it a Thursday or Wednesday?
I think it was a Tuesday.
Tuesday morning. Okay, so it happened on Tuesday morning, and normally he's home at a particular time.
Yes.
Why were you at work when he would have been home?
No. So normally he gets home around 6:30 a.m.
Yeah.
And then he would drive me to work
because
I wasn't driving then.
Right. Okay.
So I was waiting for him to come back. Yeah. And then when about 7:30, he still didn't turn up. Mm-hmm. And I'd called his phone a number of times, didn't get through to him. Mm-hmm. Then I took a bus.
Okay. What were your thoughts on the bus?
My thoughts were really, first of all, I started out being cross. I was really cross because I always used to say that your mobile phone is so that when you're on the move, I can get you. And I kept on calling him and it was going to voicemail. So I was upset that his phone was switched off. Mm-hmm. It hadn't occurred to me that something serious might have happened at this time. But when I got to work and I started calling him every hour. So I called him at 9 o'clock, I didn't get him. Called him at 10 o'clock, didn't get him. By 11 o'clock, I knew that something drastic had happened. Because...
So out of character.
Out of character.
And out of love.
Yeah. And I was pregnant at the time, you know, and not very well. So he was always keeping tabs on me, you know, giving me a call, are you okay, how are you feeling now, you know, do you need to go home? So for him not to have called me in 3 or 4 hours, nah, something was wrong.
Okay. Let's talk about the aftermath. Did you feel supported?
I did. I was so supported, Femi, you would not believe it. People have told me that you've done so well. You stood, you know, you've been so strong. But really, it's the fences God put around me to keep me. There were three important things. One was God's word to me. Two was my friends and family. And three was my home church. They all chipped in. Within the first 3 days, God gave me a word. In Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, I think 10:13, where it says you will not be tempted above that which you are able to bear. It was my mantra. I used to mutter it to myself over and over and over. And anytime I felt overwhelmed, I would say to myself again, I can bear it because God says I will not be tempted above that which I'm able to bear. You know? He sent me another word within a week, Isaiah 54, the whole chapter. I opened Topper's Bible and he had written my name in the columns of Isaiah 54. And when I read it, it spoke directly to me, talked about how Noah, how the floods came and God had promised Noah that it would never happen again. It was like God telling me that, okay, for a little minute, I took my eyes off you, but with everlasting kindness. These are the things that held me together, you know. My mom came from Nigeria. She stayed with me for 6 months. She went back and brought my dad back, and they both stayed for another 6 months. So all the time when I had my baby, because I went up with dad, I was about 5 months pregnant. By the time I had the child, my sister was here. My sister used to come to my house every weekend for a whole year. She lived in South London. I lived in the North. But every Friday, she'd arrive, and she would stay till Sunday. And then when she stopped doing that, my brother moved in with me, my younger brother. I wasn't driving at the moment, so that at that time, so he was my chauffeur. Mm-hmm. Took me to church, took me shopping, took me everywhere I needed to go. You know, my friends, the Akinrelades, the Akinsholas, they were with me. You know, so I was protected. People tell me that it's not like this for everyone, you know. Lots of widows go through this. And this is why when I hear that someone's husband died now, I feel it like it's me, like it's happening again, you know? I feel like the journey they're going to walk through, they have no idea. At the beginning, you're all in the blur of, okay, they're going to bury him, how am I going to cope for next week and everything? But years down the line, it lingers.
Thank God for all those who have supported you, encouraged you, and helped you get through.
Yes, I do thank God for that.
Because TWW is a way of giving back.
Yes.
Your children have grown up with you, taking the dual, and you have taken the dual roles, usually presenting in both mom and dad.
Yeah.
There's a narrative that tries to depict single parent households, I call them SPHs, as not providing effective parental care for their children. How did you manage your dual role and raising your exceptional human offspring in spite of no real preparation ahead of stepping into the situation. And what help is out there? Okay, let's deal with that first. And I'll ask you the...
But for the grace of God. But for the grace of God. Right from the beginning, I was determined that the children would turn out right. I never wanted anyone to point at them and say because they didn't have a dad.
Okay, so before we go into both of the children, let's talk about your first man.
Yeah.
He spent 4.5 years
with his dad. Yeah.
With his dad. How much of an impact, how much of that groundwork does he remember? How much of his dad does he remember? And how much of his dad's nature and character has he taken on?
That's really funny, you know, because he's very much like his dad. He's very calm. In that sense, in the sense of being calm, he's like his dad. You know, things hardly fluster him. You know, he doesn't show much emotion. When he was around 10, he told me I can't remember his voice anymore. And for a long time, I had a recording of his mobile phone message on my phone. So I'd play it for him. I said, listen. And then he said, oh, yeah, that's my dad's voice. And then after a few years, I lost it. I was gutted when I lost it. I was heartbroken. I was like, you know, but life goes on. So Ayomide is very much like his father in the sense he eats like his father. I mean, he only eats when he's hungry. He's not into junk food. He's not into picking. If you bring his best food and he's just eating, he will tell you, sorry, I've eaten already. Tokwe was like that. He'll have one great big meal, bowl of cereal in the morning and have nothing else to nighttime. My son is exactly like that. It's funny how the genes work, you know. It's not like they had the discussion, but he's just like his father. It was hard in the beginning. Once when he was about 7, he told me if anything happened to me, he was going to run into the road. And we were crossing a big road, and he said, I will just run into the road. And I had to kind of play it down, not to scare him.
You were terrified.
Yeah, I was terrified. I was like, what? Oh, and then I said to him, but if you do that, who's going to look after your sister? He said he would take her with him. Ah. I said, you can't do that, son. So I tried to bring them up to know, you know, that God is who looks after us, you know, and he's always there for us. I made them understand that God is first in their life and I'm a close second. Don't mess with me, you know. I informed my son from when he was 4. You cannot smack mommy in jest. You know, I'm not having it. Not in jest, not in, nah. And I informed him that the young boys on the streets that carry guns and knives and stuff, they didn't start when they were 16. They started when they were 5. When they started to disobey their parents. So I'm not having disobedience. And, you know.
So setting clear boundaries.
Clear boundaries,
having
yeah.
Having communication all through. Looking out for signs.
Yeah.
And addressing them.
Immediately. Yeah.
And
Just trusting God.
Trusting God. And always offering up yourself.
Trusting
as
God.
A sounding board.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic.
Another thing I did was make sure they were open to the rest of my family so they can see mummies and daddies and children, how it works.
Okay.
You know?
What about their other family, their dad's family?
They're close enough to them as well. They don't see them as much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're quite close with them, yeah.
Okay. What help is out there to help other SPHs struggling to succeed? Aside of the direct action within the family, what help is out there? Agencies, anything you know that could help?
I don't know of a lot. And this is why TWW was birthed in my heart. Because I've seen lots of people struggle.
Fall through the net.
Yes. I've seen not even widows, single mothers who feel they've done something wrong and so they should be punished, kind of. It's not that way. You know? Oh. had to. Okay, so in my experience, there isn't a lot out there for single parents and widows. The government does their bit. I mean, there's something called the widow's pension. So if you have a certain number of children, you get some added benefit, regardless of how much you earn and what your work is. So whenever I hear that someone's lost their partner, the first thing I try and do is direct them to that bit of income. But it's people need much more than finances during this time. They need nurturing. They need holding of hands. They need someone to believe with them, to trust with, to help them smile again. Because I remember when it happened to me, one of the things that struck me, I felt I would never smile again. I thought I would never truly be happy again in my life, you know. But it's a journey. And if you have the right people around you, you will get there.
Fantastic. Tell my audience about your new book. What is it? When is it out? And what platforms will it be on? Where can we get our mitts on it?
So the book is called...
Are you doing any book signings? Tell us all about it.
The book is called Joy Comes in the Morning. And I've written it because now I can smile again. Now I am truly at peace in my heart. You know, it doesn't take away that I miss my husband and what we might have had, you know, but I'm not stuck there anymore. I've moved on. I've watched my children grow up. I've grown up at work, you know. I've moved on and I'm okay now. And I believe God brought me to where I am now. That's why I believe that joy comes in the morning. And I believe that anyone that trusts in God, really trusts, he will get you to a place where you can say, joy comes in the morning. It's almost ready. It's still with the publishers at the moment. It's coming out next month. I'm so excited about it.
So next month is September
27th, to be precise.
27th, 2022.
Yes.
Because hopefully people are going to be listening to this in 2023 as well.
Oh, yes, of course. And the book would have been out already. It will be online. It will be on Amazon for sure. I even heard there'll be the e-version of it as well. So it will be everywhere.
Do you have a personal website?
I do.
Okay, so
it's brand new.
It's brand new.
And it's you know, it's brand new. And it's, you know, it's not quite where I want it to be yet. But you can have a look. It's taratalabi.com.
Okay, taratalabi.com.
It's as simple as that, yes.
So you've heard it from the authoress herself, www.tara, that's T-A-R-A, Talabi, T-A-L-A-B-I, .com. Great. Okay, are you currently mentoring anyone?
Well, I always say charity begins at home, isn't it?
Yep.
So I thought I'd mentor my daughter first before I mentor anybody else.
Great stuff.
And she's been a handful.
He's not going to be loving that.
She knows me well, you know. She's 18.
Straight talking,
yes.
Shooting from the hip.
This is it. She's 18 years old, but she thinks she's 45. So oftentimes I have to remind her, hey, come here, girl. We're not actually mates, you know. I'm the mother, you're the child.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, I would say that my relationship with her is like mentor and mentee, you know.
Okay.
I'm constantly telling her this is the way things should be done. And she's constantly telling me, no, mom, but eventually we will get to agreements.
Fantastic.
You know? So, yeah.
Fantastic. Who's your biggest supporter?
My biggest supporter, you won't believe it, I think is my brother.
Well, give him a shout out. Mention him on the program.
He's Timmy Afanu. He works for the BBC.
Wow.
He's just a couple of years younger than me. And we've always been close. And over the years, after we've both matured, you know, he's one person I can go to and I know he would tell me the truth. When I did the first book cover and I showed it to him, everybody was okay with him except my brother. He's insisting that this is not good enough. And he wasn't happy until he actually came down and did a photo shoot himself. And then did, you know.
Is he a photographer?
An amateur one.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, it's an amateur one. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
And on that very happy note, we're going to take our second break. Whatever you do, don't touch that dial. You've been listening to Mrs. Omotara Talabi on Real Life with Femi Ibuwoye on TBS Now Radio.
You are tuned in to a radio stream from TVS Now with Femi Ibiwaya. Inspirational, engaging, uplifting radio. Don't touch that dial.
Welcome back to Real Life with Femi Ibiwaya. My guest today has been wonderful, Mrs. Omotara Talabi. She's an authoress. She is founded an organization called The Widow's Walk, and she's just written her first book, an autobiographical account of her journey to 50.
That's right.
Which will be hitting the streets on the 27th of September, 2022. So if you're listening to this program after that date, it'll be available on Amazon, on all good bookstores.
That's right.
Online, or you can find her on www.tara, that's T-A-R-A, Talabi, T-A-L-A-B-I.com.
That's
right. That's her personal website where you can keep in touch with the things that she's doing. Welcome back, Tara.
Thank you.
So, what is perimenopause?
Okay. So, I'm no doctor.
Okay, so some of our listeners are tuned in and thinking, that sounds like what I'm going through. How can you help them turn out of depression into hope?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is perimenopause?
Okay, so like I said, disclaimer, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a medical professional of any sort. I'm just a 50-something-year-old who has been through some stuff. Okay, so when I turned 50, everything changed in me. And I was like, what is this? And for someone who has been well all my life, I was not used to having, not being well, not used to having headaches or dizzy spells or anything like that. It was quite confusing that something was going wrong, you know. I eventually found out that I wasn't sick. I was going through early menopause, which is a perimenopause. And it's just about when a lady's reproductive department is shutting down. It's coming to an end. The hormones in your body are not producing as much as they should be. And hormones being the building blocks of your physical body, if they're not producing at a level they should be, then it affects everything, you know. And for years, I knew of hot flashes, and I knew of, you know, people have night sweats. That's the narrative that everybody knows about. Mine presented in totally different ways that I hadn't heard of. You know, I had lots of dizzy spells. I had itchy legs. I had crawly skin. And not until I researched it did I realize that these were all symptoms of perimenopause. Now, in the beginning, I was quite depressed because I was scared. I thought I was going through something terminal. I thought I was really sick.
Pretty dire.
Honestly. Okay. And it was.
So, who did you turn to when that all started? Where did you go?
Dr. Google. Honestly. Okay. It was in the middle of COVID. It was so difficult to get a doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
You know, you had to be very specific. You had to be telling them that your leg was falling off to get a doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
And my leg wasn't falling off. And even the way I was feeling, I couldn't even articulate it properly. So I had to do research. I did so much research. And then I started finding everything, you know. And you know, they always say, Dr. Google, be careful with it, because it will tell you something that might scare you, and that is not the case, you know. So I was reluctant to search. And then one day, I was lying on my bed, and God said, just do a deep search now. And I did, and I came up with 66 symptoms.
How do you recognize God's voice?
It's a good question, because a few times in my life, I felt as if I physically heard him say, go and do something. And go and check Google was one of it then that day.
Okay.
It's just a quiet knowing, you know, a quiet knowing in your heart that you should do something. It's a prompting, kind of, like, get up and do this. So I did. And like I said, I found 66 symptoms of perimenopause on Dr. Google, and almost 30 of them referred to me. And the moment I knew that this was about menopause, I was at peace. You know, the fear disappeared, the agitation disappeared. I no longer felt like, oh, I was dying. I thought, oh, now I know what you are, I'm okay. You know? And then And so now I really wanted to shout it at the rooftops and tell every woman in England that, hey, guys, there's something going on with us 50-year-olds that is not a disease. You know, young children at 15, 16, they know about puberty. Why is menopause such a secret? Anyway, I did think I was going to write a book about it. And then I thought to myself, you know what? Write what you know first. And that was how my autobiography came about. I thought I'd write that first. And then, so my next book, hopefully, will have something to do about menopause.
Fantastic. Let's imagine you could dial back to when you are in your teenage years, maybe 17, 18 years old. Let's assume that age, you could go back to that age right now.
Yeah.
Without losing any of your experiences from now. So you've gained all of that knowledge, but you're at that age.
Yeah.
What choices, would you be making the same choices today as with the benefit of, you know, all the new technologies, the mobile phone in your hand, the ability to be able to take photographs, do your wet spreadsheets on your phone and stuff like that. And also this drive for environmental, helping the environment in whatever way. But what would you do differently?
I was just going to say that at 17 or 18, I wished I had a mobile phone. Oh my gosh. I wish I had Google at my fingertips, you know. It took me a while to get there because I'm not really a techie sort of person. But I have discovered that any information you're looking for right now is at your fingertips. When my daughter says to me...
Come to Google.
Yeah. When my daughter says to me, Mom, what does so-and-so mean? Even if I know what it means, I'll tell her to Google it. Go and check it. Go and look for the information yourself. You know, I think it's really... children nowadays have no excuse. The information is right at their fingertips. And their mobile phones are glued to their hands anyway. So they have no excuse. I wish at 17 I had that facility. That would have been brilliant. You know, we had these great big cameras. Can you remember?
Yeah.
These great big cameras, you know. And with all the SLRs and, oh, goodness me. If only we had like a phone to take all those pictures. That would have been brilliant. Apart from that, no, I think I still believe in the same thing and I do the things that I do now. It just would have been so much easier, you know. I discovered that I don't even need a concordance anymore to search for scripture. All I need is Google. I need to know half of the scripture and put it in and it brings it all up.
Tara, do you have a bucket list?
I'm a girl of simple needs. Yes. I have two things I still want to do. I want to go to New York and I want to go to Niagara Falls. At the moment, that's the only two things on my bucket list. It might grow. Like I said, when the kids were younger, I didn't even want to think outside the box. All my thoughts and my energies were into bringing them up. I never thought of going on any sort of exotic holiday. No. I went on holidays for them. Now, I'd like to go on holidays for me.
There was something about one of your journeys to...
Paris.
Paris, yes. Tell us about that experience. Yes. What was the low point?
So I took the kids to Paris, yeah, to Disney... Was it Disney World or Disneyland? Disney World, yeah, one of the Disneys.
Yeah.
I took them there because I knew that when we go, they'll be able to entertain themselves.
Disneyland, Paris.
Yes, that's it. They'll be able to entertain themselves. So we got there, and true to form, everybody went to do what they liked to do. Mm-hmm. My son went on the big rides and my daughter went on even bigger rides.
Mm-hmm.
And since I wasn't going to go on any rides, I thought, I'll go on a train ride. And when I got to the queue, there were thousands of people in the park, thousands. And everybody was doing something fun. Nobody was on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were in groups of twos, threes, mommy, daddy, kids, you know, or four or five adults together. And for the first time, I felt lonely. I felt alone in this great big crowd. And it taught me a thing. That as a widow, as a single person, you've got to be purposeful about where you go. You've got to plan ahead. Don't put yourself in situations where you feel all alone in a big crowd. You know, it's not productive.
Are you confident of meeting your Master King and Redeemer at any time?
Mm. So let he who stands, thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall.
It's not even from that perspective. I think the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ
is sufficient,
is sufficient.
Yeah.
However, what does anybody listening right now need to know about living in a state of preparedness for the second coming of our Savior?
Okay.
What do you just need to do?
I believe that I've lived or I'm living a clean life. It's very important to me. You know, I always tell people that what I can't do in public or what I cannot attest to, if somebody says to me, really, did you do it even in secret? I need to be able to say, put my hand on my heart and tell the truth. Yeah? So I always tell people, I'm an open book. My life is an open book. And now that I've even written a book and I've put it in print, it's so true now more than ever. I believe I'm ready to meet my Maker. No, I'm not ready. If he comes now, yes, I'm ready to go. But because I have young kids, I'm like, I think they still need me. For that reason and that reason alone, I'm ready. I'm happy to stay here. I always think, when we die, what's going to happen over there? Are we going to see our loved ones? The thought of seeing Tokwe again excites me in a way, you know? I can't tell you, put my hand on heart and tell you exactly what's going to happen when we get there. But it's nice to think that, we could hook up again at some point. So, yes, if the clarion call comes today, I believe I'm ready.
Great stuff. Now, we're coming to the end of our time together. But before we go, how can anyone listening get involved with the Widow's Walk? And what support do you need to make it a success?
So the Widow's Walk is, it's like you said, it's in the incubator. Our vision is to reach as many widows and put a smile back on their face to restore them to peace, joy, and happiness. I plan to register it properly on the Charity Commission, and I will just need supporters, people that believe the same thing, people that are willing to donate some form, to make some kind of financial contribution to it, to commit to it, you know, on a monthly basis, even a £5 a month, £10 a month, so that we can project. And I mean, I've sent to a widow like a hamper or a bunch of flowers, and the feedback I got from it, like the person, it was what they needed just at that time to know that they're not forgotten. You know, they're not out there on their own. They're people that remember them, are thinking of them, know what they're going through. You know, so TWW's first aim is to reach these people and to remind them that life goes on and you'll be okay.
Fantastic. Please remind my audience about why we should get a copy of your book.
Oh, you should get a copy of my book because I can assure you, you will be blessed when you read it. The few people that have read it, that have read the manuscripts, have come back with gushing reviews. So I know it's the story of my life and I was candid in it. So yes, it will be a blessing. I can assure you of that.
And where can we get the book again?
You can get when it comes out next month, it'll be on Amazon. It will be on my website, which is taratalabi.com. And all other platforms that sell book online. Yeah, it will be available there.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us today. I'm sure my audience have been tremendously challenged. They've been blessed and they've been encouraged, you know, by listening to you this today, whatever time you're listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to Mrs. Omotara Talabi tell her story to Femi Ibiwoye on Real Life with Femi Ibiwoye on TBS Now Radio. Until the next time we come your way, please, whatever you do, keep listening and keep getting blessed. Thank you.